All right. Come to order. We're short on a quorum, I think, yet, so we'll wait until we get enough to do the minutes. Representative Osmond's sick. We have some bills that were held over from last week's hearing, and we got the people that have come a long distance to be here today to testify. So the presenters and the committee members, with your questions, if you could please be sensitive to the time needs. We'll have 10 bills in the agenda. That means we'll probably have about 5 to 7 minutes per presentation. If we have additional time after the hearing on the bills, we can go back and ask the additional questions on the bills, and we can arrange for presenters to meet with legislators outside the committee hearings. All the bills on the agenda will be heard and laid over for consideration, the committee bonding recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. Also in the back of your packet today, there's a report titled Mississippi Whitewater Park Management and Operational Responsibilities, which was prepared by the DNR as required in the committee finance bill from 2005. This is your review. Friday's meeting will be in the basement hearing room and will begin at 8 a.m. The plan is to complete hearings on bonding proposals then. Who's up? Representative M, are you ready to roll?
Yes, sir. Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here today with the city administrator for the city of Delano on a project that he is going to present to you that it's an opportunity to save the state some money, believe it or not. With that, I'll introduce Phil Kern.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Phil Kern, as Representative Emmer introduced me. I serve as a city administrator for the city of Delano. Delano is a town of about 4,800 people located on the border of Wright and Hennepin counties. We are located along the south fork of the Crow River. We have experienced flooding historically, and it's a major issue for our community from the past, also in the present. We're here tonight, requesting $1.2 million from the state of Minnesota to assist with the purchase, relocation, and removal of structures from the floodplain within the city. The bill presented to you, I believe, calls for a 75% state share, 25% non-state. Just as a correction, we're requesting 50% state share, 50% non-state. I won't go into detail. I put together a slide here of flooding events within the city since 1997. Just point out two items. Since 2001, we have had two major floods in the city of Delano, according to the National Weather Service distinction. Two of our top five flooding events in recorded history have happened within the last 5 years in Delano. So flooding is a major concern. In the last few years, the city has taken proactively a number of measures to try and address flooding. Principally, we have attempted to purchase and remove structures from the floodplain, reducing risk of property damage as well as health and safety concerns due to floods. Secondly, we have undergone a feasibility study with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to rebuild and reconstruct the temporary levee that exists in the city. You have a packet in front of you today. I'd encourage you to take a look through it on your free time. And that reviews the history of our levee in town that is not a certified levee. It was done on the threat of an emergency flood in 1969 and has some limitations. Thirdly, we've received some assistance from FEMA with past flooding events, reimbursement of flood costs. But we're trying to look ahead and proactively address problems so they don't reoccur in the future. In your packet, you have a number of maps. I'm going to refer to just one of them today. It's the second map that is in your packet. This map is an aerial view of really the heart of Delano. Highway 12, U.S. Highway 12 forms an L here on the map just to the west and south of the river. That's going to be the subject of really the timing of this and why we're making the request. On this map, there to the north, the white arrows on the screen indicate four properties that the city has acquired since 2003. We've been an active participant with the Department of Natural Resources Flood Hazard Mitigation Program. We've received matching funds from the state of Minnesota to acquire all four properties and have removed them all from the floodplain, creating additional flood storage area and reducing the risk, as I said, to property and life safety issues. We've purchased all properties from willing sellers and have actually participated with some business relocation in those areas. To the south of the map, the area indicated in yellow on the screen is an area that is going to be affected in the next year due to the reconstruction of Highway 12. Last fall, the city granted municipal approval to the Department of Transportation to rebuild Highway 12, and they are proceeding with a construction plan to begin reconstruction in April of 2007, so just approximately 13 months away. MnDOT is in the process presently of acquiring 8 properties, all of those indicated in the yellow area. They are removing all of them and realigning the roadway through that section. The third area, the middle area in between both the properties we have acquired and the MnDOT acquisition area, is the subject area for our request. There are 7 different property owners that own property in this area. All are in the floodplain, and all have been identified in the city's comprehensive plan as well as our stormwater management plan to purchase and remove from the floodway in order to increase our flood storage and reduce potential risk in the future. Next slide is going to focus in specifically just on this green area. The overlay here on that area specifically, you'll see this yellow overlay. That's MnDOT's construction plan that will be underway, as I said, in April of 2007. The city has estimated that it would take about $2.4 million to acquire, relocate, and remove the properties and businesses that are located in this area. We are requesting 50% of that, obviously, from the state. If we do not proceed with this right now, MnDOT will still need partial acquisition of right-of-way for this project, for their roadway project to proceed. There's a letter in your packet from the MnDOT engineer working with the city on this project who estimates it'll be close to $250,000 that MnDOT is going to need to spend to acquire partial right-of-way along this area in order to construct the roadway. There's also a letter in there referring to one of the properties in this area as a contaminated site. In 1999, the MPCA documented that there has been petroleum leaks from a former gas station and now auto service station in this area. The property abuts the river immediately, and as a city, we're concerned about that, and the MPCA as well is concerned about getting that site cleaned up. So if we're able to acquire these properties, that would allow us to proceed with that remediation sooner. And lastly, a number of businesses along here, I spoke to two within the last week and a half, are very concerned about the construction effect on their businesses. The roadway construction is going to result in no traffic or no regular traffic along this stretch for approximately 2 years. And so the two that have spoken to me very recently are very interested in relocating. So we're dealing with some property owners here who would be partners in this, not adversaries in this acquisition process. Funding, why are we requesting funding? As I said, we've proceeded with the DNR Flood Hazard Mitigation Program previously. We would be acceptable in proceeding with that currently. However, they have indicated to us that while this application would meet their criteria, they do not have the funding available to help us presently. Number two, ultimately, we believe this is going to happen. It's not really a matter of if it'll happen, but when. The city's plans all take into account acquiring these, and it has a benefit to the natural environment, and as I said, meets the DNR's criteria. And lastly, a present-day estimate of $2.4 million property in Delano has been appreciating all throughout the Western Metro at anywhere from 8 to 12% annually, and so there is an advantage to us to proceeding today in order to try and keep our ultimate costs down. Lastly, now is the time, we believe, the urgency to proceed now would allow, as I said, up to $236,000 in savings to MnDOT for their roadway project if we were able to acquire and grant them the right-of-way. It would allow us to expedite the remediation of that contaminated site I referred to. It would assist with relocating some successful businesses we have in Delano who are going to struggle through the highway reconstruction process. And then the present value of the properties that are appreciating quickly over time would help us to make that acquisition. So in summary, this project we believe is important locally and regionally with respect to flooding issues and additional flood storage. And we also believe this property has some significant benefits both monetary and non-monetary on the state level. With that, I've tried to be brief. If you have any questions, I'd entertain them, and thank you for considering this.
Thank you, Mr. Kern. You're right on 7 minutes. Representative Wagenius, you have the first question.
Thank you, and actually you can, because we have time constraints, please feel free to put your answer in writing and just give it to the committee. Everything you've said about this proposal is about protecting property, and I would want to know what this proposal does to protect the water resource, particularly since we are now having to deal with TMDLs on one hand, and on the other hand, I'm one of the folks downstream from you, and we know that the FRO is one of the big contributors of problems to the Mississippi. So if you would help us out with how this might or might not help with that, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Kern, could you respond to that in writing to Representative Wagenius and the committee?
Sure, I will. There's a great detail in the packet that I presented on that very issue, too.
Thank you. And Representative Fennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just quickly, you referred to you're requesting 50% from the state. And where does the other 50% come from?
Ultimately, 50% would come either locally, or we're also attempting to try and find if FEMA or the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers would have any resources to assist.
Thank you, Mr. Kern. Do you still have a butcher up there by the name of Budzo or something that's got a butcher shop in Delano? Meat shop?
I'm sorry, yeah, there still is, yes.
Him and I went did some backpacking in Wyoming.
Is he going to be
educating?
Or your beaver that you trap.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Representative Paulson, are you ready to go? Good morning and welcome to the committee. And state your name for the record, if you would.
Great. Thank you, members, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be before you. And the bill that I am presenting is for wildlife management areas. I are somewhat familiar with this issue. It's been before the committee before. And with me today, I have Lance Ness, who's the President of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance and Chair of the DNR Citizens Advisory Committee on WMA Acquisition, as well as Gary Bosick, who is representing the Minnesota Conservation Federation and Minnesota Waters. Members, there's also a fact sheet, I think, that will be handed out or that you should have just received in your packets. You can get a page maybe to hand that out, Mr. Chair. Talking a little bit about wildlife management areas, but members, I think as you will recall, Minnesota was the original state that put the practice of wildlife management areas into practice, and Minnesota has one of the highest participation rates in the country for both hunting and for wildlife watching, and it creates significant demand on our existing habitat. And I think Minnesota is expected to remain the fast-growing state, in fact, the fastest-growing state in the upper Midwest over the next several decades, significantly increasing the pressure on habitat beyond its current level. And so while we were successful in obtaining $10 million last year from the bonding process, the DNR is already negotiating additional purchases of land of up to $12 million to willing sellers. And there are opportunities, I think, to take advantage given the pressures that are with increased development around the state to take advantage and provide additional wildlife management areas for those folks. I think there's over 1,300 right now in the state of Minnesota, and there's a very impressive coalition from Pheasants Forever and other sportsmen's organizations all the way through environmental and conservation groups. So very impressive stakeholders that are involved in this, and I think we'd like to hear from some of those folks now, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, who's going to be first?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, and today we have some of our wildlife exhibits here for you to look at. We have a bobcat and a redhead duck and a barred owl, and I think there's I think there's one of those funny Chinese chickens down there we sometimes seek throughout the fields of Minnesota. So these are valuable wildlife, and wildlife management areas are valuable to all types of wildlife, not just the ones we hunt, but also to the ones that we don't hunt, everything from frogs and turtles to herons and eagles. So we want to point that out to the facts. Again, if you look at the handout sheet, you'll see some of the partners at the very bottom there. And let you look over that while I'm speaking here. And then just a note, too, about outdoor recreation. Outdoor recreation is a $4.2 billion industry in Minnesota. And wildlife management areas provide access to outdoor enthusiasts as well as the habitat that is needed for these critters to live. And this is their home. We have a report that was issued back in 2001, the 50th anniversary of the wildlife management areas, and that was presented to both the environment committees last year. And just to point out again, all these acquisitions are made from willing sellers. And so this is a great opportunity for us to expand wildlife management areas and our growing population, as Representative Paulson indicated. I'll turn this over to Gary Botvic.
Mr. Botvic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Botvic. I do represent the Minnesota Conservation Federation and Minnesota Waters. Minnesota Waters is now the merged Minnesota Rivers Council and Minnesota Lakes Association as of the first of the year. Just last Saturday, and my president, Gordy Meyer, is in the audience from the Minnesota Conservation Federation, we had the privilege of attending a quarterly meeting up in Pine City and the Snake River Sportsman's Club. And the Minnesota Conservation Federation is made up of sportsman's clubs. Nothing's more dear to a sportsman's club than a shooting range and the WMA. We adopt the highway, we adopt the park, we adopt the trail. Our sportsman's groups love and nurture their wildlife management areas. They adopt them, they take care of them. They're definitely run down. They need O&M type of money as well. But we're here to talk about acquisition, the need to acquire more WMA. So we appreciate that opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Some of the Duck Rally folks are here today. They are working the halls on a multi-level agenda, but bonding for WMAs is very prominent in that agenda. So we appreciate your help and support for additional money in the bonding bill for WMAs. Last year, as Representative Paulson indicated, $20 million was brought forward and the governor signed. It's an all-time record. DNR is here and can testify to the fact that those funds are committed. And we're asking for $22 million more, because we're really talking about a two-year scenario, assuming there won't be a bonding bill next year. We hope there's another bonding bill next year, but I'm not sure how long this yearly bonding bills will continue. But I need to talk a little bit about water, if I can. We all know that of the lakes and rivers that have been tested in Minnesota, 40% of those are polluted. They've got things in, nutrients, contaminations, impairments, if you will, in them. And land conservation, land techniques like WMAs are good for water quality enhancement and protection as well. That list of impaired waters is now reaching 2,000. Just 500 more were just added. The next listing that the PCA under delegation from the EPA will be looking at wetlands, and we anticipate hundreds of wetlands are going to be added to impaired waters. That's not a good sign for Minnesota. We need to turn that around, and I think we will with Clean Water Legacy and additional bonding dollars, particularly geared and targeted toward WMAs. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I'll stop, and we'll stand for questions.
Mr. Botvic, any one of you could answer this, but there is naturally a lot of us would like to see these lands brought up and so that they don't get purchased privately and shut off. But what's the long-range plan for, in lieu of taxes or PILT or reimbursement for the loss of the tax base? What's the future of that?
You want to take that one?
Well, I'll try. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, obviously PILT payments are a very popular topic here and need to be. I think we have to work with the counties. If we're going to take land off their tax base, we have to be responsible stewards and responsible partners with the local units of government, and that includes paying them the appropriate fair going rate for those properties that we take off of the tax roll. And that includes finding additional funds for PILT payments and maybe even improving that PILT payment rate. But I think when you talk about dedicated funds, if we can get the dedicated funds started in Minnesota, I think that would be an appropriate category that would need to be an integral part of ongoing regular dedicated funds.
Any questions from the Representative Rogini?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support this bill. What my question is more about the priorities of acquisition. I look at your little, your flyer, and down the column, you on the top two, you have some counties have only 1% of their original wetlands, and then you have less than 1% of Minnesota's once vast prairie grasslands survive. I would hope that those two would be priorities in acquisition. Is there any language in this bill that actually supports that?
I'll take that one. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, it's not in the bill itself, but in the Citizens Committee's report, the certain areas, if you look on the back side of your sheet there, has the state divided up into ecoregions. Most of the acquisition is going to take place in the west and the south. And the reason for that is the areas that don't have as much public land and open wildlife management areas to work in that. So we are working in wetlands and grasslands and again, along the rivers and streams of the fragile areas of the south and southeast and southwest to help improve water quality as well as purchase wildlife acquisition lands for people to hunt on. So we're trying to get a dual full purpose there. The grasslands, again, for pheasants and ducks are vitally important, as well as the wetlands they need to survive in. So we're trying to accomplish a couple of things there while we're working on the program. So as we purchase lands, we're also trying to do some good environmental benefits. And a little bit about that, a lot of these wildlife lands are environmentally beneficial. They hold soil, they conserve water, and provide good habitat again. So they do some great things out there besides just places to hunt.
Follow-up, Representative Wojcicki,
yeah.
We're at 10 minutes.
Okay, just I'm anxious that we save a few more prairies with this, native prairies.
Grasslands are important.
Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. Representative Paulson, do you have a list of the lands that DNR plans to acquire with this? We always like to know what we're buying.
Chair, Representative Junkie, there is a list. I think it may be coming around to be handed out right now, but it's a fiscal year 07 land acquisition potential priority list, and the DNR, I think, is here to comment as well if necessary. But essentially, I think as was just mentioned, is there is a focus on the west and the south and along the Minnesota River Valley in particular. That's where the record of purchase from the last bonding cycle went through. But if you look at this list, I think you'll have a clear idea of where that focus would be.
And Mr. Chair, while the list is coming around, maybe to the witnesses can answer this. We see a lot of these bills come through for acquisition, and obviously, you know, as Representative Cornish pointed out, hunting land's important. However, if you're talking about water quality, like we are this session and last session, I'm sure we will be continuing in the next session, how do we give incentives to landowners to improve their water quality, their ponds, their rivers, their streams, without applying? I got a lot of farmers out there that would be that are more than happy to improve the ponds and wetlands on their acreage, but don't want to sell the property. But if you're talking about water quality, you know, whether it's duck flyover zones or you know, feeding areas for wildlife, that's just as important, I think, as other than the hunting aspect and the public use aspect. But again, for improving quality, where do we find money? Start finding money. Is this a pot we could look at for some of that at some time, along with, or is there something else coming? Or what's your group's looking at? Because I think that's a piece we're kind of missing out on.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Junkie, you know, I think you're hitting right on it. This is an integral part of the program. The rest of the program includes the principles that are being discussed and debated in Clean Water Legacy. We need to put all those tools into play as it relates to, and I guess the word we need to talk about is easement. We don't need to talk about state ownership of every acre in Minnesota to make this work. We need to talk to landowners and farmers, easements lighten that burden on pill payments because, as you know, easement retains title to the landowner. So that person is going to be entitled to use that land within, you know, a contracted agreement or situation, but they will be compensated, could be compensated, with federal money, state dollars, local money. I think we're going to have to find ways to find local money. I think we can and need to establish that true partnership But yeah, it's going to have to be wetland preservation through WMAs, but through, look, here's the example, Clean Water Legacy. We need to set up TMDLs, total daily maximum loads. In effect, these are environmental, these are like EISs or EAW studies. Now that's going to be put together for each impaired water, whether it's a lake or a stretch of river or combinations. And in there, there will be a business plan, if you will, a task force, a plan put together of how to best to address and reduce the impairments in that water body or bodies. And that's going to have to include farmers and landowners, lake owners, septics, wastewater treatment, and that's, you know, then we have to look at that whole litany of problems, and then which are the most cost effective. What do we best?
Again, Mr. Chair, just quickly, where does that money come from? Is this a pot where we could use some of that? I mean, I know you're talking about wildlife management acquisition here, but is this, you know, can $2 million or $4 million or some, can we get started with some money on some more easements and keep it in private ownership? I know Representative Pennis has talked about this and others, you know, taking more land off the government rolls. I think, the easement method is a good way. Where does that money come from? I understand the whole concept, but where do we get the money, here or somewhere else?
Mr. Bostic, want to give him a brief answer?
Historically, Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is bonding money, so you're going to have different pushes and pulls. You know, a bonding bill is different from your general fund bill or LCMR, but you have to look at all those tools to put a package together. And I don't know whether that's going to happen this year. This has traditionally been bonding for land acquisition, for not just hunting and fishing and wetland protection, but also wildlife watching, for instance, is the fastest growing hobby or activity in Minnesota. Those folks aren't carrying guns out there, but they're exercising, they're walking their dogs, they're walking their kids, and that's important to our society as well. But whether it comes out of this program, Representative Junkie, I don't know. I wouldn't expect that, and there's a lot of pressure on this program just to do what it was set up to do.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add to Mr. Botzik's comments, there are several other programs, too. There's CREP and CCRP and WRP. There's all kinds of federal programs we're working with. They gain some of these access dollars, federal dollars, to get in for easements and set-aside programs. So there is some other money out there. The most important thing would be, of course, if we could pass dedicated funding. And in the dedicated funding language we've set up, there are pots of money in there for easements, set-asides, and things to work with the farmers and landowners that currently own the land without actually purchasing their land. So there are some programs, and one other program that's being worked on by a multitude of groups is called the Working Lands Initiative. And that's, again, a nice program supported by farm groups as well as conservation groups. So they are working on some other areas to help those funding out, to get to the landowners, to give them some help on the land, because I agree, Representative Dunkey, there are landowners that want to improve their land and keep control of it.
You, Representative Paul, do you want to close?
Well, I just want to thank members for the time. I know we were successful last year in obtaining some funds for bonding for the land acquisition, and I think, as was mentioned by Mr. Ness, this is part of a citizens organization that came together for this recommendation, so it's not a pie-out-of-the-sky recommendation number. It really comes from some very good, thoughtful approaches in terms of coming up with that dollar amount. Thank you.
You, Representative Pennis, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to say, my question was going to be, what is the average acreage that would be encompassed in these WMAs? And when you handed out the list, I see it, and so I've got that answer. I do have to say, though, when it comes to some of the counties I represent, it looks like a fairly small acreage, Kitson County, a total of a half section, Roseville County, 500 acres. You realize you're adding that to an immense WMA already. Save your money. You can't support what we now have.
And with that, we'll move on to the next. Thank you very much for your testimony. Or did you have?
Send it. I'll take it.
Thank you much for your testimony.
Okay.
Representative Knobloch, are you ready to go? And then while Representative Knobloch's coming up, Representative Pennis, have you had time to look at the
yes, I did.
Minutes? And we've got,
I would move those minutes,
two sets.
Mr. Chair. I read them both.
The minutes for February 3rd and for March 2nd, Representative Pennis moves to accept these. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Knobloch, welcome to the committee. State your name and your bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jim Knobloch here. Members, thank you for having us. I guess I've been here a long time, but I did not realize that I should bring animal exhibits when I present a bill to this committee, and I will do my best to rectify that.
We're doing it.
You know, Mr. Chair, you notice the cameraman went away, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, this bill also deals with land acquisition, but in a different way. It allocates $7 million for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks. And members, let me start by saying that I think that this bill, well, first of all, the history on this is that there is a huge disparity in the money that has been allocated to Greater Minnesota Regional Parks versus Metro Regional Parks over many, many years. If you go back over the last 30 years, Greater Minnesota or Metro Regional Parks have received over $250 million in state aid from a variety of sources, $250 million, be it bonding money, and we regularly see bonding money every session we have a major bonding bill for Metro Regional Parks. We see operating money from this committee for Metro Regional Parks. We see money out of the LCMR for Metro Regional Parks. We see lottery in lieu of money for Metro Regional Parks. And we have wonderful Metro Regional Parks. And even though I'm from St. Cloud, I use some of them myself. I come down to the Twin Cities with my family and use some of them myself. But we have had almost nothing for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks outside the 7-county metro area. In 2000, we had $500,000 in the bonding bill for it. 2002, we had $4 million that was vetoed by Governor Ventura. Last year, we had some money put in the bonding bill in the House. The Senate did not take it. There was no money again for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks. If you look at the history of the Twin City Regional Metro Parks, I think they're in a lot of the same situation where the Greater Minnesota ones were many years ago. When we first started the whole Metro Regional Park program 30-some years ago, Anoka was a long ways away, almost not really part of the Twin Cities metro area. It is now, but you've got Bunker Hills Preserve and many, many other Metro Regional Parks that got money. Now you look to places like Sherburne County and other counties that are on the next fringe beyond, who really are no different than Anoka County was 35 years ago when the program started in terms of need to have parkland bought because of the fast-growing expansion of the metro area, and yet they don't have any of this money from the state such as been going to the Metro Regional Park Program. Members, this bill represents a small start in trying to put some money toward Greater Minnesota Regional Parks. You'll note that it isn't allocated to any one particular grant area. It'd be administered by the Department of Natural Resources. We had a very big study in the LCMR a few years ago that talked about the need for this, that identified Greater Minnesota Regional Parks that in some cases were larger than state parks, had more attendance than state parks, served a broader area than state parks. And so these are meant to be not local parks, but parks that serve a regional area no different from some of the metro regional parks or some of the state parks. And some people say, well, you've got state parks in Greater Minnesota. Yes, we do. I would say, first of all, they are state parks. They are for the whole state. Secondly, there are areas of the state that have no state parks, particularly anywhere near them. My area of St. Cloud, it's 30 or 40 miles to a state park in any direction from St. Cloud. That's not a lot, but it's nothing compared to what is down here in the Twin Cities metro area. I'm not arguing against Twin Cities metro regional parks. I'm simply saying that the time has come to recognize that the population growth is such that we need to allocate some money toward Greater Minnesota for the same reason that we started doing it in the Twin Cities many years ago, that there's a basic issue of equity here in which Greater Minnesota regional parks should get some amount of money when the Twin Cities have been getting so much. And, Mr. Chairman, I have Pete Teisman from Stearns County here as my one witness to briefly discuss this bill further.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Knobloch. I would like to support what Representative Knobloch said, that we're experiencing significant growth in the Benton, Stearns, and Sherburne County area. That's just part of Greater Minnesota that I happen to be most familiar with, between 12 and 50% from 1990 to 2000. As he said, land prices are going up. When the county first became involved in its quarry park operation, we purchased land for $1,100 an acre. When we purchased the last piece in 2002, it was $11,000 an acre, and we're looking at purchasing an additional piece for over $15,000 an acre. So we're experiencing some of the same growth, which is great to see people want to move to our area, but to protect some of the diminishing natural resources, we think now is the time to seek some funding that would, of course, require some local match. As Representative Knobloch said, some of our parks, such as our quarry park, we do some research to find out, you know, we don't have any state parks. Well, who's coming to our parks? And based on the research we've done, we found that 50% of the people that use our quarry park come from outside of Stearns County. So working with Representative Knobloch and other local jurisdictions, we're hoping to that you'll look favorably upon this bill and provide us some funding so we can continue to expand some of these parks.
And Representative Erdahl, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I want to commend Representative Knobloch for bringing this forward. Agree with the points he was making that we need to look at equity with Greater Minnesota as opposed to the metropolitan parks, and you know, certainly in support of this. In his reference to state parks, certainly invite Representative Knobloch and his family to come to Greenleaf Park if we ever actually get it. Thank you.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly support this too. Obviously, being from rural Minnesota, I do see the need. However, how are we going to ultimately define rural or outstate regional parks? How are we going to define that? I mean, we have cities and counties and Erdahl looking for state park money. And at what point, who's going to make that definition? Are we going to have a chance to weigh in on that as a legislature to kind of look at that, Representative Knobloch? Because, again, there's a lot of area out there and a lot of people that are looking for money. And I think you understand my question.
Sure. Representative Knobloch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie. I think, as you know, I've always been a big advocate of only using bonding money for projects of regional or statewide significance, except in extreme cases of a natural disaster or something like that. And I see this as being money that does not go to a city park, a local park, but only should go to parks that have some true regional significance. We did, as I mentioned, do a big study of this issue in the LCMR a few years back. They outlined a fair number of criteria in terms of general number of acres, regional draw, etc., that should be looked at in terms of defining what a Greater Minnesota regional park should be. I guess I'm open to defining that if we actually want to do that. I'm open to leaving it up to the DNR to use as a grant program. I think that to a large extent it would be modeled already on what the DNR is doing with some of their initiative grants in terms of looking at regional parks as opposed to just local parks. But it's a good question, Representative Junkie, and I certainly want this to only be going to parks that truly serve a regional area.
Representative Walgenius?
Well, thank you. How's the governor on this? Will he veto it?
Representative Walgenius, Mr. Chairman, no, I don't believe he'll veto this. I would like to. He has, when I've spoken to him about it, he has not been opposed to it.
But it was not in his recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, it was not, which was a disappointment to me.
Okay. There's, Representative Nunn, you want to
close? Mr. Chair, one more thing I guess I'd like to say before we wrap this up. You know, this has sometimes degenerated into a fight between the metro area and the greater Minnesota area. There was an amendment on the floor last year where one member proposed taking money from the metro parks and giving it to Greater Minnesota. And just for the record, I want to say that I have been trying to preserve the friendliness between the two groups, and even though it would have benefited my area, I actually voted against that amendment. But I still feel that there is a great deal of unfairness here, and there is a great deal of need, and that if we are concerned about preserving parks in Greater Minnesota, for environmental reasons, if you just look at the exurbs around the Twin Cities and go to Sherburne County and Wright County and other areas that are in no different situation than Anoka County and some other areas were 35 years ago, we should be looking at a program like this.
Okay, thank you, Representative Knobloch, for your testimony, and this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in our bonding recommendation to the Capital Investments Committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Solberg, sorry for switching the order around here. Are you ready to go?
Hey.
Mr. Chair, welcome, or thank you, for the opportunity to present this bill before your committee. Just let me give you just a little bit of background. First of all, there are several environmental learning centers around the state, and over the years, I think five or six of them have received some state general bonding to improve their facilities. One of those, in conjunction with the Bannon Foundation, was Long Lake Conservation Center. And they are the centers that provide the educational opportunities and environmental education for many students. I have with me today Scott Arnson, the administrator from Aiken. The Long Lake Conservation Environmental Learning Center at Palisade has kind of a unique relationship with Aiken County. And Todd Rodenkamp is the Long Lake Environmental Learning Center director. So I'd like to turn it over to Scott to give the details of this particular proposal.
Welcome, sir. If you give your name again for the record.
Thank you. Scott Arneson, Aiken County Administrator. Good morning, Mr. Chair and representatives. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard. As Lauren said, Long Lake Conservation Center is an environmental learning center. It's actually the first one that was in the state of Minnesota. Began in 1963, and it's actually the only publicly owned environmental learning center that doesn't receive state school funding. And up until the time of the state school funding reform, there really wasn't too many issues as far as funding capital improvements. There were some minor issues, but that is really what helped us get into the current situation. Long Lake Conservation Center provides environmental learning for both students and adults. Over the years, they've served about 160,000 students, about 5,000 a year, and about almost 2,000 annually for adults. Out at the campus, you'll find 760 acres of land. It's all forest FSC certified land. We've got a campus there, dormitories. We have outdoor classrooms, which we're beginning to begin having classes for students and loggers and foresters. It's not just environmental learning for children, but also groups like the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, the Pheasants Forever, National Wild Turkey Federation. They're also using this campus out there as well. The actual request is for a building that is supposed to have 128 usable dorm rooms or beds. Currently, 64 of those are unusable. The building was originally constructed in the 70s. It was constructed with the cheapest possible materials, a lot of volunteers, and basically we begged, borrowed, and stole to get it built. It's currently probably a safety and health issue, and our Minnesota students are in there. Without the ability to use those other rooms, what's happening is the larger schools, and you can see the schools on the back of the page, probably some from your area, but with the larger schools are having to come in multiple sections in three and four different times, and what it does is it screws up their curriculum back in their school district, and it's cost ineffective. So if we were able to, utilize these rooms in a refurbished fashion, we wouldn't have those issues. And they're also If you look at it, buildings were not built the same as they are today. There's some code issues in the building, and it's really, there's some safety issues there, and those are the reasons why we can't use the 64 beds. We have, on this page, it asked for $1 million, and the bill it asked for $1 million. We do have revised numbers, just recently got them this week, and if that was revised to $700,000, that would be approximately half of what we're projecting the overall construction cost to be. And at this point, I think I'll stop, and I don't know if the executive director has anything more to add.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Todd Rogenkamp, executive director of Long Lake Conservation Center. I just want to add a comment to say that Long Lake is the original environmental learning center that was started in Minnesota, and we provide students from all over the state of Minnesota the opportunity to come and participate in environmental education. And having the opportunity to refurbish this building would also allow us then to bring in more schools than we currently do right now, which then would provide more students in Minnesota the opportunity to have these programs. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, with the revised numbers, and when I put this in, there was just kind of a, what's it going to cost? And, well, it's $1 million, and didn't have any opportunity to visit with them about a shared responsibility. So I put the bill in for $1 million quickly. But we are asking that revised be down to about $700,000, and that would represent half. And so there would be whatever we do, they'd have to find a local match for it as well. So as you consider this proposal coming forward, you keep that in mind of the new revised numbers.
Representative Solberg, in the wish we consider that an author's amendment? And
yes, if you would so do that. I would appreciate that. I don't have it drafted, but it would also represent about half of the cost, so there would have to be a match for it.
We'll just change that wherever it says $1,700,000. Thank you, Representative Solberg. Anything else?
Well, just thanks very much for the opportunity to present it. I think this is an opportunity to really continue to educate not only our children but the adults that use this facility. And if you get an opportunity ever to stop by and look at it, it's a great facility. We need to maintain it, keep it up, and there's been an awful lot of local effort into this Environmental Learning Center. So I appreciate your consideration and time today.
Thank you.
Thank you
for coming up to testify. Hold this bill over for possible inclusion in our committee's recommendations to the bonding committee. Sorry. Representative Hackbarth? We're doing pretty good on schedule here if we can keep her about 7 minutes or so. Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. This is a bonding proposal for $300,000 for the Minnesota State North Shore Trail. The trail is currently a multi-function trail, multi-use trail. The only thing that it currently really doesn't have available is all-terrain vehicles. And this trail was originally built as a snowmobile trail, and it's used for hiking and horseback riding and many other things, but primarily snowmobile trail. And we've done a study. Last year's legislation did a study on the North Shore Trail to see if this is possible to be turned into an ATV trail. And with some modifications, that study said that we could do this. The North Shore Trail is about 143 miles long, but what we're proposing is only about 55 miles of that 143 miles, and it runs approximately just north of Duluth up to almost Silver Bay. So I think there are supposed to be some people here, but maybe they didn't come. Apparently they're not here or tied up or something. They couldn't get down here. I think one of the county commissioners from St. Louis County was supposed to be here, and one of the folks from...
Oh, there.
Oh, from Lake County? Come on down. Somebody from the ATV club was supposed to come too, but apparently didn't make it. But so, folks, with that, we have not had a chance in my committee to look at the study that the DNR did on the North Shore Trail. But it looks like we can do this 55 miles of trail and turn it into ATV trail for approximately $300,000, and that should cover all the costs. And if we need to dip into the ATV account, maybe we can do that to cover any additional costs. But from what I understand, it looks like $300,000 should take care of it. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome, sir. If you could state your name for the record.
Yeah, my name is Tom Martinson. I'm land commissioner of Lake County. And the County Board of Commissioners passed a resolution, I believe it was in 2000 or 2001, supporting the use of the North Shore State Trail as an ATV trail. So it has been about 4 or 5 years since they did that. The reason they did it was because there was quite a bit of use of the trail by ATVs in the Finland area by locals. And they wanted these local people to be legal. Since then, a 6.5-mile section of the trail was approved for use, and it does connect the Moose Rock Trail in Finland to Silver Bay. And it's been very successful. People have stayed on the trail. So when we asked for that resolution, it was mostly for the 6.5 miles. But we looked at the rest of the trail, and most of the trail in Lake County, in fact, the park Representative Hackbutt is talking about, is 65% on Lake County tax forfeit land. So we see it as much as a forest management issue as a recreation issue. We feel that if there's a designated trail, that the use that's now sometimes happening will be legal. The DNR folks that will be out on the trail managing it as an ATV trail will notice any off-trail use. The use does even help the Trails and Waterways people because it knocks down the grass in the summer. There really isn't very much hiking on it. It does pass through some wetlands, but I think these can be mitigated. Lake County does have 90% of its pre-settlement wetlands. So for those reasons, back 4 or 5 years ago, they supported the use of this trail. And if it's feasible and makes sense, our board chairman thinks that it should be funded.
Thank you.
Committee members, Representative Roginius.
I just need some clarification of your testimony. Are you suggesting that if ATV use was allowed in this area, then the rest of the area would be closed for ATV use?
Not at this time. It is a mixture of ownership, so I'm sure that signs would be placed saying, you know, stay on the trail, especially if it did cross private land. There isn't much private land in this area. I think eventually Lake County, like I believe Cass County and Crow Wing will probably have no cross-country travel. That hasn't happened yet, and it hasn't been a problem yet. We haven't seen the use that some of these areas have had. So for right now, there are trails that go off to the side, and if those were forest roads and if they had been graveled and if they were allowable with us, there would be some of them. But I believe that if the trail was used, we would know of any problems a lot better than we do now.
Any other questions? Representative Johnson, you had one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know it's a very controversial matter, and so community input is extremely important. What's been the extent of local community participation and discussion of this proposal to date?
Lake County is a little bit different than Cook and St. Louis. I'm not sure why it hasn't been more controversial. Most of the objection has come from out of the county. We've had a few people that were members of MRR. I don't believe they are anymore. The trail is in a fairly uninhabited area. I think all these are possible reasons.
Mr. Chair, just a quick thought. But how many community meetings have you had on this, I guess is more directly the question.
How many community meetings
in the neighborhood up there?
On
this proposal?
Well, it's hard to tell. The first resolution came as a result of the DNR comprehensive planning that took place maybe 5 years ago, and public was invited to that. We didn't have many outside people that came. We've had the board minutes are published. I just think it's been a lot bigger topic in Cook County and to some extent in St. Louis.
Lastly, so I'm still not clear, how many community meetings have you had on this?
Specifically on this?
Yes.
I'm not sure if we've had any specifically on this. It really hasn't been an issue, to tell you the truth.
Representative Bill.
This issue has been widely circulated and covered in the local, in the Lake County News Chronicle, and particularly in the Duluth News Tribune, which is the larger paper along the shore. Many front page articles and many articles in the I forget what section, but there's Sam Cook, I think, has had articles about this. At the St. Louis County Board meeting where they passed a resolution some time ago, a few years ago, supporting the concept of using the trail for ATV use, the concept, short of a study and public input and fleshing out all of the details. There's an organization, Minnesotans for Responsible Recreation, that has had quite a bit to say about this and has received immense coverage in the paper in terms of their position regarding this. They're against, they're opposed to this conversion or this additional use on that trail. So it's not something that is under the radar in my legislative district. Now, on the other hand, it's so on top of so much on the radar that Senator Bach and I are not supporting any part of the Cook County Trail, because we have interacted so much with our constituents that at this time there's no clear direction from Cook County residents regarding the North Shore Trail and ATV use, the conversion or the addition of the use to ATVs in Cook County. So this bill and... I'm not going to speak for Senator Bach, but he's authoring the bill in the Senate as well. And, you know, we are only supporting the portion of the trail that runs from the Normanna Road, which is north of Duluth. It's a county road out in a very rural area, and that runs cross-country up to and intercepts the Moose Walk, Moose Run Trail up in the Finland area. Now, I want to, for the committee members that aren't familiar with that area, this is not along the lake. 61 is along the lake. From Highway 61, you can see the lake at all, you know, almost everywhere except when you go in the Silver Creek Tunnel. This is up in a number of miles, up to the top of the hill and then set back from the top of the hill. It's in an area that's been extensively logged. There's significant public land through, as Commissioner Martin has suggested, a tax forfeit. And there is extensive logging road networks, and I invite Commissioner Martinson to correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, this is not some area that has not been heavily traveled by machinery. And the study has shown that it is feasible, and we're supporting it. But it is just the real answer to your question is it's one of the most well-covered issues in Cook, Lake, and St. Louis in terms of paper coverage.
Representative Johnson, and we're Vernon Daly.
Okay, go ahead. I can pass it to you.
Anybody else?
If I could add just one thing, most of the trail, the snowmobile trail, is located on old railroad grades from the 1900s. So,
Representative Hackbart, you want to close?
That would be it, Mr. Chairman. I thank you for your opportunity to bring this forward. I think it's a unique opportunity to take advantage of this, and it would be great for tourism in that area, and I think it would be a shame not to do this.
Yeah. Chairman.
Representative.
One last thing. You know, when I came to the House of Representatives, one of the controversies is and one of the things that we absolutely stood on in the environment part of the House of Representatives is that we need to get ATVs on trails. That is the only solution, or nearly the only solution, to the ATV problem in Minnesota. And now this is an opportunity to take that step forward. And I'm actually very happy that it's in my district. I know there are constituents of mine who are unhappy that I would say that, but I can tell you that it is broadly supported in my district to establish ATV trails so that the 275,000 users of ATVs, however many there are in Minnesota Ridge, can have an opportunity to ride and be legal and to do it properly. So that's my final comment.
Thank you.
I guess we have a couple of other people. Representative Hackmar, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Got a couple of people. Kevin, is it Beagler and Susan Sulferman? If they would come down and offer testimony. State your name for the record if I butchered them.
I have some materials here for the committee members.
The page would take those and...
You need to know.
You can go ahead with your testimony while they're distributing them.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Kevin Beagler. I am the president of the Twin Cities Chapter of Child Unlimited. I'm also the legislative chair for the State Council, Minnesota Council of Child Unlimited, which represents the 8 chapters throughout the state. And I've been given the authority to speak by a proxy for the Lake Superior Steelhead Association. Brief outline of our organization, we're a national-based cold water conservation organization. We've been around since 1959. We're an entirely volunteer-based organization, and our primary goal is for the preservation and restoration of cold water habitats, namely for salmonid species, trout, steelhead, salmon, things like that. And that the objective of that goal is to provide more angling opportunities for recreational anglers. We're looking at a number of issues, and we can certainly appreciate the need and the desire for people that participate in ATV recreation to have a place to ride. One of the things that we need to do is look at the characteristic of the land that the trail crosses. As Representative Dill has stated that, yes, there has been a variety of logging activities and natural resource development and utilization in that area. However, the 48 miles or 55 miles, whatever mileage we're going to be talking about here, does at this time cross 26 dedicated trout streams in that area. Trail in its entirety crosses 46 dedicated trout streams. And what we've seen in many of those streams is a development of diminished runs and steelhead numbers. And we're talking about not just the health of the streams in the area where the trail crosses, but the overall health of the watershed itself and its impact upon Lake Superior. We're not talking about a minimal numbers, or we're not looking at a bunch of guys looking for a private trout stream. There are 90,000 trout stamps sold in the state of Minnesota every year. This is a significant recreational community. Lake Superior Steelhead Association has themselves put $500,000 in habitat work on the Knife River alone. That's just one of the streams that this trail crosses. One other area that the state's going to have to look at from a risk of building trails into what might be considered sensitive habitat is that this is a recent development, actually just within the last couple of weeks. There's been a filing for the Lake Superior coastal brook trout, which is a variety of brook trout that is native to Lake Superior. This, to give you an idea, this is not the little brookie that people think about throwing in the frying pan. This is a fish that's 2.5, 3, 4, or 5 pounds, very large in size, and actually had some renown at the turn of the 19th to 20th century. But anyway, an application has been filed to place that that particular species on the endangered species list in the state of Michigan. There are areas of habitat along this trail that would be critical for the recovery of that species. I want to remind the committee as well that Minnesota belongs to the Council of Great Lakes, and as such, the governor is a co-chair on that council. And one of their primary goals or mission statements is to enhance fish and wildlife by restoring and protecting coastal wetlands, fish and wildlife habitats. We think of clean water oftentimes in pollution control for chemical pollution, but with trout streams, it's a little bit of a different nature. And I apologize, we had, I guess, a little bit of a technical breakdown here. I actually brought a video to demonstrate or show the committee exactly to what extent organizations like Trout Unlimited, Minnesota Trout Association, and the Lake Superior Steelhead Association have to go to restore a trout stream once it's been damaged. But one of our primary threats to trout streams are not necessarily chemicals, but actually erosion. Included in your packet is a report, or not a report, but an article that was just published on the DNR website. And I'll quote from you on the bottom there from Jason Meckles, who is an area coordinator or manager down in southeast Minnesota. Meckles says sediment and trout don't mix. At each life stage, trout are affected by sediment. He says sediment can get into the gills of adult fish, stress them out, and ultimately kill them. Trout eggs can be smothered. The entire aquatic food chain can be disrupted from increased sediment loads. The number one thing that we have to do when we restore trout streams in the state of Minnesota is deal with sedimentation issues and erosion issues and poor soil management. One of the reasons that we're opposed to having a project like this go in on the North Shore State Trail is because of the number of crossings, and we feel that it will, in fact, increase the number of points of source contacts for soil erosion. We have a critical problem in southeast Minnesota. We still have a problem in this state, by the way, with illegal riding. The comments were made that the DNR will be aware of postings and be aware of the laws and the regulations regarding ATVs and trout streams. The problem is it's not negligence on the part of the DNR. They are simply overwhelmed. They cannot be at every crossing 24/7 to prevent this. And it only takes a few bad eggs in order to have a negative and an overwhelming negative impact to an overall watershed. Let's talk a little bit about the economics of the area, if I could, very quickly. All these points are in my handout.
Mr. Bieber?
Yes, sir.
I've got another testifier to follow you, that if you could work toward a close, that would be great. And then
absolutely.
We were talking about southeastern Minnesota. Well, this is northeast.
I understand that, sir.
And I was just wondering how the DNR weighed in up there on your concerns. I thought this was going to be compatible for both, that they would have bridges and this and that to keep them out of the creeks and to prevent the turbidity and things like that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in all due respect, if you look at the photographs that I've included in the back, and we've noted there's already been illegal riding on the trail, there's a couple of photographs that are from the North Shore State Trail that were taken when riding was actually taking place in the stream shed, or in the watershed, within view of existing snowmobile bridges. And one thing I might add is that Trout Unlimited, by the way, is not opposed to the compromise of motorized recreation in the form of snowmobiling on the trail. We feel that's a minimal impact to the watershed. We've made that compromise. And I understand that, you know, we're talking about the North Shore State Trail, and I'm citing examples of southeast Minnesota. What I'm trying to cite to the committee is that the problem of enforcement is widespread. We see examples throughout the state, not just in this area. But as far as economic impact of angling with regards to these streams, and this is taken from the DNR study that was published in 2004, and this actually speaks directly to just the streams and shoreline. This does not involve Lake Superior trolling or angling. It is an industry that accounts for approximately $22 million in sales in the region. It has an income impact or effect in the area of $12.1 to $13.8 million for income. And it affects the employment of between 435 and 484 jobs. So this is not, again, we're not talking about isolated streams that don't play an important part. Whatever happens in the headlands and the headwaters of these streams are going to impact the quality of angling at the shoreline itself where those streams then merge with Lake Superior.
These are some very important considerations. And I want to add one more thing in comparison. As a result of the last legislative session, we've heard from the DNR there are 11,000 miles of trails for ATVs in the state of Minnesota. There is also access to 3.7 million acres of state forest land for ATV recreation in the state of Minnesota. By comparison, there are 1,900 miles of trout streams in the state of Minnesota. If you make it relative to recreational opportunities, the trout anglers in the state have less than 2% of the same opportunity that ATV riders have. It's a significant issue, and it's out of balance. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bigler. Representative Dill, before we get in.
I just have a short comment, and it's I don't want anyone in this room to think that in the 6th District we don't value those trout streams. And that's one of our greatest assets that we have. And in no way would I endorse the construction or the addition of the use of ATVs to this trail unless it were properly done so that the impact was there was no impact, that it was properly done and constructed, and all of these things that you've discussed are mitigated. We do not want to foul up trout streams in the 6th District in northeastern Minnesota. And the last thing is, I just had a question. How many of those trout streams roughly get all the way to Lake Superior?
Actually, the 26 that I mentioned, we're not talking about every stream in that actual trail section. What we're talking, those 26 are designated trout streams that
All get to Lake Superior.
They flow into Lake Superior. Yeah.
Now, it seems to me that there's a highway that crosses those same trout streams.
That's
so
correct.
They were able to apparently meet the needs of Trout Unlimited in terms of when they built this highway so that the trout fishermen could get there. So I'm thinking that you get my point. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, all due respect, Mr. If I may address the comments, with the highways, most people with their cars stay on the highway. And the problem that we're talking about is people that are not using the trails responsibly. And that has been an issue.
You don't have to start out with all due respect. We know you respect us.
Okay.
I'm not so nice with respect. I woke up this morning to an air alert down here, and I know Representative Virginius would appreciate this with me, and I am concerned with the particulate from the cars and so on, eating food, putting on makeup and whatnot when they drive. What are we going to do about that? Not related to the thing, but related to the problem.
Well, we're on bonding today. We might have to cover that in our policy committee, Mr. Representative.
Somebody else has their hand up. Ms. Solterman, would you like to testify now?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Susan Solterman, and I'm the policy director for Audubon, Minnesota. I'll keep my comments very brief. As you've heard, this is a very wet trail. And indeed, it's so wet that really the number of hikers that use it during the spring and summer is not that high. And the reason why is because they really have to wear waders to walk through it. The type of ATV driver that would be attracted to that kind of trail is just the kind of driver that tends to spoil it for the rest of the group. And I want to clarify that Audubon, Minnesota is not opposed to all ATV riding. We think motorized recreation has a place in Minnesota. But there are a minority of drivers who like to go through water and stir up mud, and that's the attractive part of the sport for them. The North Shore State Trail would offer that opportunity repeatedly. And, in fact, that's the problem with the trout streams, is that if you build bridges, that's great, but there are going to be a minority of riders that want to drive through the streams. In addition, I want to point out that the DNR's recent North Shore State Trail feasibility study lowered their original estimate of the cost for converting the trail from a snowmobile hiking trail to an ATV trail from $875,000 to $700,000, and they lowered $100,000. And they lowered that number by cutting out the increased cost for enforcement. So there are issues at DNR about regarding the lack of resources for adequate enforcement all over the state, not just in northeast Minnesota. And the way that the state can afford to convert that trail is to reduce the enforcement in the region. And, you know, that puts the trout streams and other wildlife habitat even more at risk. And then another quick point I want to make is that in the feasibility study, there's a specific mention regarding land ownership. And if I may read from a printed document, Mr. Chairman, it says land ownership is a critical factor concerning any change in trail use to the North Shore State Trail, since the majority of the trail corridor is not presently state-owned. When other land acquisition programs come before the legislature for bonding dollars, we have to show, the programs have to show that there are willing landowners available to sell their land to the state or create easements for the purpose of the program. And in this case, this would be $300,000. I don't think any willing landowners at this point. And my last point is that I think this $300,000 would be a great source of funds to create a boardwalk adjacent to the trail for the majority of users of the trail, which are hikers, other than snowmobilers. And since it's a wet area, I think it would be great for bird watchers and hikers, and I encourage you to consider that option as well.
Representative Rogues, I'll let you make a comment, but I think we're going to go round and round about policy and trout and turbidity and soil depth. And so if we could cover that another time, just hit the economics of it now.
I actually have a legal question that perhaps staff could help us with later on. And that is, if this are private lands and we were to recommend this bonding, does that mean that we would be taking lands by eminent domain? And that would be my question for this. And if we could get that from council, I would like to have that later.
Mr. Helen, could you help him with that? Get together with
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to, but I'm sorry I did not hear.
Oh, Representative Boyginius, why don't you just state here?
Okay, the question is something that may take some research, and I'd be glad to get the answer later. If there are private lands involved here, and apparently there are, and we appropriate the money for a public resource, then are we then saying that some of this land can be taken by eminent domain? And that's my question, and I don't need the answer now, but I would like to have it in writing later, if we could. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hackmark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to conclude here on the North Shore Trail issue. This is going to be open to environmental review. There's going to be many, many more meetings on this. Even if this does pass and it does become law, and before this even gets appropriated out, there's going to be many, many more meetings on this issue. So it's not a done deal by any means. This all subject to environmental review and many, many more meetings. So I just wanted to make that statement. It's not necessarily going to happen, and even if we do pass this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Slawick, are you here? Representative Slawick, we've been trying to hold it for around 7 minutes. It wasn't possible at the last one because of the controversy, but okay. If you could keep that open, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think this is pretty non-controversial. We'll see. We're here today to talk about the Lower Afton Trail Project, which you're getting a copy of before you. This is a Ramsey County project that costs about $321,000 in state funding to construct a bicycle pedestrian paved trail, which is parallel to the north side of Lower Afton Road between Century and McKnight Road. If you have the handout, I don't know if it's gotten hasn't gotten its way around. I'll wait just a second to point it out. The bonding request will be matched with non-state funds from Ramsey County, the City of Maplewood, and private grants. And the proposed trail will connect residents from the cities of Maplewood and Woodbury to the Battle Creek neighborhood of St. Paul and Mississippi Greater River Park Trail System. I have a resident who uses the street to cross over to where there isn't a trail right now, and he can tell us how this is dangerous. We also have Ramsey County Commissioner Victoria Reinhart with us today. If you have your handout, it's the solid red line with the arrow is the part that we're talking about, which right now there is not a trail there. The residents are crossing over the road, and they to go to into Battle Creek Park, they have to walk along the road, which is a 50-mile per hour speed zone. So who's going to go next?
Representative Spalding, in between there, could I ask a question?
Yes.
And maybe staff can help you with this. Because of the wording of the bill on line 17 there, the Commissioner of Transportation, do you think that this would more properly be in front of the Transportation Committee, or should we move it there, or are they going to call for it? Or?
Mr. Chair, we've been back and forth quite a bit on this. I don't know if staff wants to refer it there, but it we've thought this was the proper committee.
Mr. Chair, most trail bills, as you well know, come to our committee. I don't know why this was drafted to give the money to the Commissioner of Transportation, but it is the Lower Acton Road project. Maybe that can be determined later when we move this to the next committee.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Representative Slavik.
Thank you. Next, we'll have County Commissioner Victoria Reinhart.
Welcome. If you state your name.
Yes, I am Victoria Reinhart. I serve on the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners, and I am here in support of this project. I think one of the things, first of all, you've gotten all the basic background information on it, but one of the things that's really impressive about this particular project is the number of partners that we have. I mean, we're working with the City of Maplewood, the school district, state agencies, and healthcare providers. Through an initiative known as Active Living Ramsey County, we are going to be seeking funds through that initiative as well because of the livability and the number of people that live in that in Lower Acton Road area, one of which we have with us today. And I can't think of anybody that can describe this project and the importance to the community better than Emil. So I'm going to turn it over to Emil.
Welcome, sir. If you could state your name, then go ahead.
Yes, I will. My name is Emil Schwarzenegger. If you have a little trouble with that name, it's like Schwarzenegger. I've been after these folks for quite a few years, having retired about 25 years ago, and it's a very acute situation for not having a decent way to cross Lower Acton Road. The Lower Acton Road over the years has come from a trail, I suppose, ox trail, I suppose, and now there's traffic between the areas into Battle Creek, and there's a lot of people living in the town that I live in Maplewood. I was born on the north end of Maplewood, and I now live in the south end of Maplewood, and I am quite a walker. I've been retired 25 years. I'm proud of it. I've gotten to be 90 years old. A lot of it I can attribute to the walking that I've had to do. When I was on the farm out in North Maplewood, I walked up and down the rails with the horse, with the cultivating corn, and different stages in my life. Now, after 25 years of retirement, I do a lot of walking because it's good for me, and I try to get anybody that I can advise to walk because it has helped my health. I know that, and it's helped me to get to be as old as I am. But I can tell you that I see a lot of Lower Acton Road, and there's just no way on a 50-mile-an-hour roadway, and you have to have that to keep the traffic moving, or otherwise they're going to be sitting on top of one another. There's just no way of having just a shoulder along the side of the road. Originally, there was a shoulder along the side of the road, but now in utilizing the space and what they've got, they've had to put in turn lanes. Well, that, there's no place to walk there. And I see people coming down with their kids and their mom with a bicycle, father with a bicycle, and a couple little kids. They want to get into Battle Creek Park. Well, how do they get across there? You got, and they come down the street. People are going to get killed there. Here, last fall, I saw an older gentleman trying to navigate from St. Paul through Maplewood to go up to the drugstore, Wagons, up in Woodbury. And he was in one of these carts that crippled people have, riding up along the shoulder, onto the turn lane, going up to get his medicine. And it just, to me, I've been around a long time. I've worked for industry. I don't know how good of a witness I take, but I've been around. I was in transportation. I was an Interstate Commerce Commission practitioner. In my career, I've even been up in Canada and pipeline projects, things like that. But to me, this is one thing that really needs to be done. There's a decent trail put on the north end. We're trying to encourage people to walk, and even today, probably, God willing, I've got a good headline to get to. If you see in the morning, Pioneer Press, on the local section, one of the headlines says, "Walk, don't drive to safety." Well, that's just what I'm talking about. So I just urge you people to take and help this project along. There's a lot of people that will benefit on it. And if there's any questions I could answer, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Thanks, sir. You did a good job there. Committee members, any questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Tennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this probably DNR, if they could provide the committee at some time with the total number of acres that are taken up by walking trails that are paved, and I'm a walker too, so I'm not. This is not being miserable, which I usually am. And what the increased amount of runoff is in some of the wetland areas that are destroyed already, and then what would be the increased erosion causing turbidity downstream due to that speed of increased runoff, because it does increase. Thank you. So if the DNR could get that for me. I agree, Representative, that it should be roads and walking. However, I think they've got a grasp on the roads and how much there is. I would like to know just in walking trails so I can have a little comparison with that, with the other few trails there. Thank you.
We'll make that request.
Could I make one remark? You're talking. Mr. Chair, could I make one remark?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
You mentioned walking. I've never had a bicycle, but I think bicycles are important too.
Okay, thanks, sir. Representative Heckworth, did you have something?
Thank you, Chair. Representative Slavik, any portion of this new proposed trail crossover private property?
Mr. Chair and Representative Heckberth, not that I know of. No, this is all Battle Creek Park. You can see the gold outline is the outline of the actual park.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in an effort to stay thin and not eat too many cheeseburgers when I go through Litchfield or Wilmer, when I drive, I see this and particularly last June when we were in a continual recess. I've been on this bicycle trail several times, and you get down into this area, and you don't know where you're going to go next. And then you run through the park, and then you find yourself in some random neighborhood, and you're trying to get back to the Capitol to check in and tell people that you're working. And it just seems like $321,000 for linkage and the expansion of a regional and statewide significant trail system similar to the last three blocks in downtown Minneapolis, which is, I think, important as well, but more expensive, that these are appropriate bonding requests, similar to one that I'm going to have tomorrow, which has federal money match. It's about a three-mile link to another 10-mile dedicated trail, and, you know, it's very important to get people on their bicycles, walking more. You know, even in rural areas, there's trail opportunities that don't cost millions and millions of dollars. It's in the hundreds of thousands. So I'm hoping that we can see that this is a problem, because it's a very fast road. And right when you get warmed up on your bicycle, you find yourself at a dead end.
We've got four left in 7 minutes, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Peterson, if you give me your cell phone number, I'll let you know when to come back. Trying to help.
You know what, Mr. Chair, you know what I mean.
Okay, Representative Slawick, could you close?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate your consideration, appreciate the comments. And Representative Peterson, next time you're in your district bicycling, you need to give me a call.
Okay.
I'll be out with you. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And House File 2676 will be held over for possible inclusion. Representative Magnus, we've got people from out of town here, so we're going to put you in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Second one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Appreciate you hearing our bill today. We've got people testifying from quite a distance, so I appreciate you doing that with me today. I have Carrie Neske from the Minnesota River Project, and our bill is in a $500,000 appropriation. It's something that we're certainly, most of the committee members are aware of, are familiar with. We're now counting 10 counties in this. Mr. Chairman, your county's been added to it, I guess. So, mm-hmm. 10 counties. We have seven state representatives that are representing that area of the state. So, it's a large area and across very very many legislative districts. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll turn it over to my co-testifier here today.
Thank you, Representative.
Welcome, ma'am. Can you state your name for the record?
Certainly. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Neske, and I am the coordinator for Area 2 Minnesota River Basin Projects, Incorporated, out of Marshall, Minnesota. Along with me today, I do have our chairman, Joseph Schuweiler, Redwood County Commissioner, and also our vice chairman, Andy Lochner, from Brown County. We are here today to request $500,000 to be included in the bonding bill for our work involving floodplain management within the nine counties of southwestern Minnesota. Before you with the red cover is a short booklet which summarizes our purpose and the work that we do within the realm of flood damage reduction. Rather than going through that page by page, I'd rather that you thumb through it at your own leisure while I speak just a little bit as to what our service is for those nine counties and ultimately the state of Minnesota. Area 2's approach to flood control over the last 28 years has been to stop the water where it falls and to construct flood damage reduction projects in a stair-step fashion down the slopes of the Catoctin Prairie, more commonly known as the Buffalo Ridge. This ridge is more commonly known for the wind turbine generators located upon it, but this ridge also creates elevation differences up to 80 feet per mile in the Lac La Parle watershed and 50 feet per mile in the Redwood River watershed. In contrast to the Red River Valley, where you all know that flooding is also very prevalent, their elevation differences are just several feet per mile versus what we have. Due to these very steep slopes, flooding becomes an annually occurring horror for the people who live there and try to make a living from the land. Our approach allows for landowner-friendly and voluntary solutions to control the erosive forces of floodwaters while reducing further damage to stream banks, and which adds sediments and nutrients to our already impaired waters. I would like to turn your attention to page 5 of the booklet. It's the one with the pictures. The top of the page says 2005 project example.
In particular, the bottom photos are before and after illustrations of these erosive forces that are unfortunately very common in our area of the state. This area has a very long history of flooding dating back to 1916 when the Corps of Engineers investigated flood control efforts on the main stem of the Elimasson River. Area 2 suffers a unique secondary form of flooding also, coined crossover flooding. Not only do the floodwaters flow northeasterly to the North Minnesota River, they also flow from northwest to southeast, which allows the water to actually skip watershed boundaries and again go down that slope of the Catoctin Prairie. Essentially, our flooding dilemmas are twofold. By doing our part to reduce flooding and to keep the sediments and nutrients on the land here at the headwaters, we are bettering the Minnesota River and the Mississippi River for the generations to come. I thank you for your consideration of our request and the opportunity to speak to you today. I do want to appreciate your limited time schedule, but I would take questions if you do have time.
Members, any questions? Representative Arginius.
Just quickly, one of the things you are talking about is helping meet the TMDL along the Minnesota River. I think it would be more helpful if we could quantify that in some way, how much this was helping with that TMDL. And I think that's a question we're going to have to be asking of all projects from now on, because that's such a big problem. So it's not that I'm just asking you. I think that anything where we're doing bonding money, that we should be ranking it higher where it has a positive impact in meeting our TMDL demands.
Mr. Chair and Representative Virginia, just to clarify a little bit, we are working to quantify the amount of sediment that we're able to stop, the amount of stream banks that we can keep on the stream bank and not slipping into our rivers. And of course, when you have sediments, then you also have the phosphorus and the other nutrients that go with it. So again, it is something that we are working for. It's not like exact science by any means, but I agree with the TMDL concerns that there does need to be some quantification and proof of the good being done.
Yeah. If there's no more questions, Representative Magnus, you want to close?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And if you look in the booklets you've been provided today, you'll see there's a strong history of this organization to spend the money on sound projects, and we have a sound, solid list of projects that are proposed, $1.5 million. They've got a strong record of spending the money wisely and efficiently. They've got a strong record of leveraging the funding, and our organization is thought of as a preventive mode and a preventive organization, not a reactionary organization, and that's what we want to continue to try to do. And our record is very good, and we'll continue to support that.
Chairman. Thank you, Representative Magnus. One more question, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Magnus and the Area 2 folks. You've been here several years. I think I second what Representative Magnus has said, and hopefully we can get favorable treatment in the Senate and continue the work in Southwest Minnesota. As was mentioned last year, there's more drop from Lake Hendricks on the South Dakota border to Montevideo than there is from Montevideo to New Orleans. So it's regionally very steep, and this does slow water down, and it's a unique situation in the upper Midwest, so we need to continue the projects to address some of the things Ms. Representative Wiggini has said, and to continue what Representative Magnus has talked about.
Thank you, Representative Veal.
Yeah, Representative Peterson, that's the drop is primarily because of Buffalo Ridge coming off of Buffalo Ridge.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Lilly.
Oh, good one.
Ouch. Moving right along. Go ahead, Representative Lilly.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. This is kind of what I'd call a little housekeeping item. It's in previous bonding bill, there was an item that was approved, and we're just trying to get that money. We asked for $500,000, and we were given through the bonding process $100,000, and so we're not going to be able to do the whole project, so we're going to try and access that $100,000, and I guess it's in funds that we can't quite access. So I've luckily, being new, I don't fully know what all this means, but I have people that are very smart with me. Again, Victoria Reinhardt's here, and Greg Mack from Ramsey County, and they can further explain what we're trying to do here. But thank you very much for your time, and we'll be quick.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. And if you can get by with just one of you testifying about the same thing, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am still Victoria Reinhardt, Ramsey County Commissioner, here regarding the Lake Links Trail Project. As Representative Lilly said, when the reduction happened on the Lake Links Trail to the $100,000, we were grateful for the $100,000, but because it wouldn't adequately fund the design and engineering associated with all three segments, we needed to come back this year to ask that it be designated towards the one segment known as Silver Lake Trail. And that is the on the west side of Highway 120 from Joy Road to 20th Street in the city of North St. Paul. The reason that, and MnDOT, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, has determined that they can utilize the $100,000 for the engineering documents required for this one section. And 120, of course, is a MnDOT highway.
Representative DeLilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any questions? There's no ATVs involved in this project or trout streams, so we're kind of glad to hear that. But
okay. If there's no more questions, well,
thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hold this over for possible information. Okay. Representative. Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn, the committee's on its way down to a possible takeover of the room, so we should hurry.
Yes, I know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This bill is actually something that's been passed at least once or twice before, and it's too small an amount. This is for the this is House File 480. It's too small an amount to probably apparently make it through the whole funding committee conference committee. I have with me Judd Rietkerk from the Minneapolis Park Board to talk about it. But before that, I'd like to point out to you the March issue of Bicycling Magazine, which calls itself the world's leading bike magazine, and it has the best 21 cycling cities in the U.S. was the feature in this. And it introduces the article by saying, the urban treasures, the riding is beautiful in these 21 bike-embracing cities with miles of rolling asphalt or undulating single track or both, stunning scenery, buzzing bellow cultures, forward-thinking urban planners that make room for cyclists, and the kind of two-wheeled festivals and rides that you want to visit if you don't already live there. Now, Minneapolis, in the category of 200,000 to 500,000, didn't make the first three places. Madison is first, Tucson is second, Albuquerque is third, but the honorable mentions, the first honorable mention is Minneapolis, and why, one of the reasons why, and the is that the city's master bicycle plan promises that by 2020, everyone will have convenient access to a bike route. 2005 Bike Counts Must Ride is the Grand Round Scenic National Byway. And what we're talking about today is the completion of that item, which got us honorable mention in this distinguished magazine. So I'd like to turn over to Judd from the Park Board to
welcome,
go
sir.
Over the handout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Judd Rietkerk, Minneapolis Park Board. I'm the Director of Park Planning and Project Management. We've handed out a small brochure here for you today that'll give you some additional information on the project.
The proposal before you today is to complete this design plan, which would include engineering and the schematic design for this missing link. And the missing link portion is circled in red on the front of this brochure. Runs out of northeast Minneapolis through southeast Minneapolis. It's a link between the northern part, northeast part, down to the university. Excuse me. The Grand Rounds Parkway system was envisioned by HWS Cleveland in his master plan for the park system in 1883. That gives us the significance of the whole project. By 1930s, Theodore Wirth had completed most of the system, and actually there's a leg of the system that was completed that has been removed through some land disputes in the 30s. We lost part of a couple miles of the parkway system. He started the project. It basically starts at the university. It circles clockwise south around the city, goes through across Nehaha Park, goes out to Chain Lakes, up through the Victory War Memorial, across the northern part of the city to northeast Minneapolis, where it stops. The handout contains facts. There's 50 miles of parkway. There's 87 miles of bike trails in the park. In the handout, what I did provide as an additional piece is an air photo of the segment that is in the topic of this study. Basically, there's a couple of opportunities, and I label them A, B, to start this missing link, and a location of desire is C. You can see that we've sketched out on this several potential trails or options for roads, and the complexity of that is what's leading us to request funding to do this analysis. The benefits of this, as you know, property values in the areas where we construct parkways and parks, it usually increased by 25% in that proximity, so it has a huge economic impact to the city. The connection of all of the major bike routes in the city, as you know, there's a northeast connector that comes in that ties in at Stinson Boulevard. That connector meets the parkway, but it really has only one direction that it can go. We also have connections to this parkway system from the Loose Line, Kenilworth Trails, several other regional trails all tie into this. So this is a missing link that will pull all of those elements together. It's historically significant. The people come to Minneapolis beyond the Grand Rounds in the tour. We've been incorporated into the National Scenic Byways now for a couple of years, and we're pursuing all actions that we can to enhance that. So, with that, one more point I'd like to mention is that we have additional funding from Hennepin County to assist us with this in about $200,000.
Representative Kahn, is this a bill that we heard before and made a recommendation on?
Yes, it's been in the House version and maybe even in the Senate version of another bill several times. Because, as I said, always seems to slip through the cracks.
Unless there's any other questions, maybe we can move on to your next bill and get that in, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay. The next one, problem when you're around here for 30-plus years, you keep working on these problems for 30-plus years without having them go away. This is House File 2969, and people, we have a handout. I have two people here, and I think we'll start with Mr. Patrick Conoy from Hennepin County. We had a PowerPoint, but we got mixed up as to what we needed to show it, so
okay.
I think he's going to go through it using the
sir, handout. If you can start out with your name and go ahead.
Patrick Conoy, Economic Development Project Coordinator, Hennepin County. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Before you is a printed PowerPoint presentation. Let me just start out. We're talking about Fort Snelling Upper Bluff. The reason Hennepin County is involved with this area of Upper Bluff is not within any other municipal jurisdiction. It's only within Hennepin County. It's bordered by Minneapolis and Bloomington and St. Paul, but it is only in Hennepin County. The reason we are currently involved with this and here today is we were approached by the State of Minnesota Department of Natural Resources staff to look at potentially working with them on this area, possibly even acquiring this property. And another reason is this property is very, very close walking distance to the Fort Snelling LRT station. And in addition, there are only two roads within the Fort Snelling Upper Bluff area, and both of those roads are county roads. Just a brief history on the Upper Bluff. It was, construction started on the Upper Bluff buildings in 1879. Over 600,000 soldiers were processed through that site during World War II. In 1946, the Fort Snelling was decommissioned. In 1960, the Upper Bluff became a National Historic Landmark. 1966, it became listed on the National Register of Historic Places. And in 1971, it was sold by the Department of Interior to the state of Minnesota. The Department of Natural Resources actually manages the property. In 1991, the golf course portion of it was leased to the Minneapolis Park Board. And in the year 2000, recreation fields were leased to the Minneapolis Park Board. The area includes 141 acres, including historic buildings, golf course, and recreation fields, and there are 28 historic buildings in the Upper Bluff area. 10-minute walking from the LRT station and served by county roads. There are several images in here. The buildings were started construction in 1879, and the problem today is you go to the interior, the buildings are falling apart. I mean, the roofs are collapsing. A lot of the buildings don't have roofs at all. As you'll see on the infantry barracks building, some of the buildings had windows on the first floor boarded up, and the upper floors were not boarded up. They're open to the weather. We went out and did an inspection in November, I think, Bob, and we couldn't even get up on the roofs to look at them because the roofs were in such bad shape to do a full inspection. There are a number of buildings. There are administrative buildings, infantry barracks, medical, former medical buildings, officer quarter buildings. But on page 6 is a sample interior damage, and this is typical of a number of the buildings. You can stand on the first floor and look up and see sky all the way directly up to the top of the building. What we've been doing is a number of things. We've been working with Native American groups who have interest in the area. We're working with the airport. We're working with the National Park Service. And I mentioned National Park Service. National Park Service has a program called Preserve America Treasures. It's a grant program and requires matching funds. One of the reasons we're here today is we'd like to get emergency stabilization funds to help actually just button these buildings up and use and then apply with that to the National Park Service. We're looking at potentially doing a master development plan and working with the development groups of all types in the area. And part of that is under the BRAC program, and I'll mention that in a second. What we have done thus far is we conducted, out of Hennepin County funds, phase one environmental assessment for the whole Fort Snelling Upper Bluff area. We conducted a preliminary market study, a transportation access study, and we evaluated the golf course to see what the potential was on the golf course and operations. Just this year, we received a grant, $176,000 from the state of Minnesota, to look at the Upper Bluff area and the 88th Readiness Command. 88th Readiness Command is under a realignment, potentially. Part of the base personnel are going to be sent to Fort McCoy in Wisconsin, but there's going to be a realignment. We're studying the employment impacts, plus we're doing a land assessment of that area. So we're working with the airlift wing, the Marines, the Navy, and the 88th Readiness, and then we're looking at land utilization for this entire area. But what we have done recently is, and Mr. Hunter will be talking about that, is we work in conjunction with the DNR and Sends to Serve to button up some of the buildings and what we could do over the past winter. What we're looking at now is to obtain more assistance to do more of them, do more window work, sure, and work on the roofs.
Perfect. Got you off here, but why don't we give like 1 minute to your last testifier here because we have to vacate the room.
Say your name and...
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Bob Hunter. I work with Hennepin County Community Corrections, manage a number of programs, including the Hennepin County STS Homes Program, intense 7-month construction skills training program for inmates in minimum custody state prisons. We train them for 7 months. They're carpenters. When we're done with them, we place them in jobs, and they go out and pay taxes and make a living for them and their family. Over a couple, 3 days, a few weeks ago, we went out to the site. We plywooded up a bunch of windows. We're capable in our training piece to do some roof work and stabilize these buildings. So we are available. We can get a crew assigned. We've got a number of crews in Hennepin County that do this type of work. We're available. We would like to go on site to do some training for our offenders. Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
Well,
thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, you know, I think this is a win-win project, win-win-win-win project for everyone involved in terms of dealing with the problem property that's been a problem for DNR for 30 years, using sentence to serve people in a useful way, and also getting the major entity in charge of it, Hennepin County, that has the responsibility for the fiscal area.
Thank you, Representative Kahn, and the testifiers. I'm sorry we had to rush you. I encourage you to lobby individual members at your leisure.
Okay.
And we're going to meet tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Please be on time, and we'll start right off with some more projects.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.